Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and finally today, the debate over e-cigarettes. We debated e-bicycles before, now it's e-cigarettes. They are the battery-powered nicotine delivery devices that look like regular cigarettes, but instead of producing smoke, they produce what supporters say, anyway, is a harmless vapor. There is legislation under review in New York City Council over whether e-cigarettes should be banned in bars, restaurants, and parks, just like regular cigarettes. My next guests disagree with that limit on e-cigarettes. They are Amy Fairchild and James Cosgrove. Is it Cosgrove?
Cosgrove.
Sorry, there's no S there. Professor of Sociomedical Sciences at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. Maybe you read their op-ed in the Times today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, we want your voices on this. Do you use e-cigarettes? You're trying to quit, get off tobacco, and you use these as a transitional device, 212-433-WNYC. Call us up and tell us what you think of a potential ban in public parks and bars and restaurants, 212-433-9692. Or maybe you work in a bar or a restaurant. Have e-cigarettes presented a problem with enforcing the ban on tobacco cigarettes because they look so similar? That's one of the complaints. 212-433-9692 or anything else that anyone else wants to say about this, 212-433-WNYC. And so you write in the op-ed that these e-cigarettes are undoubtedly less hazardous than tobacco cigarettes. So because these just heat liquid nicotine and emit a vapor instead of smoke, are you quite confident that they are less harmful to the user and equally as important, less harmful to the people in the vicinity than tobacco cigarettes?
Well, the data, though, preliminary at this point, this isn't like 1964 when you had thousands of studies on the hazards of tobacco to draw on. There's a relatively limited range of studies. But so far, they're all demonstrating, or let me say the vast majority are demonstrating that the risks of e-cigarettes are really pretty limited and there is no substantial risk at this point to other people. And you have to compare that against the billions of deaths that are forecast for tobacco smoking this century.
Because I guess we should remind ourselves that the most compelling reason for the ban on tobacco cigarettes in bars and restaurants and parks put forward by Mayor Bloomberg is as protection not for the smoker but for other people. It was more than anything a worker's rights kind of thing, so that people who worked in bar and restaurants didn't have to be subject to the smoke of the smokers. So are you sure that the vapor is not harmful to waiters and bartenders and people in the vicinity of people vaping, as they call it?
Well, in science, there is never absolute certainty about anything. But the weight of the evidence is saying that there is no harm to other people at this moment in time.
And so is the point that these deliver nicotine, which is the thing that gets you addicted to tobacco cigarettes, but they don't deliver the smoke, which is what causes the cancer and the heart disease and the other problems?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So they provide a way for – and the majority of users are using them at this point. At least this is what the studies that are out are saying, as a way to begin to wean themselves off of traditional tobacco cigarettes.
And is there good data that that works?
There is, I would say there's not great data yet. There is enough data that made us confident that this is a good harm reduction strategy.
As you point out, nicotine is a highly addictive substance. There are about 46 million Americans who smoke, almost one in five adults, and many of them are unable to quit because they are addicted. Many of those people will die from tobacco-related deaths because they cannot quit.
You do seem to refer in your op-ed to nicotine addiction itself being harmful. In what ways and to what degree?
Well, I think the arguments are not that nicotine addiction is itself very harmful. In very high doses, it can be harmful, just like in very, very high doses, caffeine can be harmful. But it does carry some harms, just like a lot of the substances that we that we consume on a daily basis carry some harms, but we tolerate nicotine addiction in the form of nicotine gum and the patch. And this has become a standard public health way for smokers to stay off of cigarettes.
Let's take a phone call. Nick in Windsor Terrace, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Brian. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
I'm an avid e-smoker, I'd call myself that, despite the protests of my family and my girlfriend, and now apparently the New York government. I don't really want another thing off limits that I can't do in public that is actually helping me not smoke. I haven't had a cigarette since February, last year. So
congratulations and good luck with it. If it was just not allowed, though, in bars and in parks and other places where you can't smoke a regular cigarette, would that hamper your recovery, if that's the right word?
It would just make me feel even more scapegoated than I've always felt as, you know, at this point, just a citizen of New York City. Just increasing amounts of control over what you can and cannot do that is seemingly harmless to other people. I mean, sometimes it made sense at first, and now it's just overboard. And this stuff is not so bad for you. My own anecdotal study is that I'm a singer. I was smoking too much. My high notes were gone. I've stopped smoking. My high notes are back. I mean, I can work again. So, I don't know. That's my addition to the conversation.
Anecdotal evidence from a man who uses his voice. But if secondhand vapor is not harmful, and Nick, thank you for your call, here's an argument against them that comes from Health Commissioner of New York City, Thomas Farley. This is at the City Council hearing on e-cigarettes last week.
There's no city enforcement 99% of the time of the Smoke-Free Air Act. It ends up being self-enforcing by other people in a bar or restaurant or the wait staff. And if they can't distinguish this, then that could really fall apart.
And that seems to be a central argument, that if the wait staff can't tell the difference, then they can't enforce. And so maybe tobacco cigarette smoking will go unchecked and make a comeback in these environments where nobody wants it.
I think we have no reason to believe that this won't be self-enforcing in exactly the same way that the bans that were initially enacted in the 1980s and the 1990s ended up being self-enforcing. At the time those bans went into effect, there were dire predictions that there would be fistfights breaking out in restaurants, and the bans turned out to be completely self-enforcing. I think that the point that Commissioner Farley makes actually supports an argument for making these available. I think we can expect that this will be self-regulating in the way that the prior bans were.
And e-cigarette users have the greatest incentive to be the enforcers of these bans, because they're the ones who benefit most from ensuring that people don't smoke tobacco cigarettes in public.
Martha in Highland Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Martha.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was traveling north and stopped in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and picked up the D.C. Television stations. Now, I don't remember whether it was CBS or NBC, but they had a segment called The Doctors. And they had two people on whom they were interviewing. One was a woman who had her child in the car seat in the back of the car. And she somehow, and I don't understand this, her e-cigarette got back with him. I think it was the battery exploded and he was burned. She stopped his burning by taking her water cup or whatever and dousing him with it. The other was a gentleman who had his e-cigarette in his shirt pocket, breast shirt pocket, and it exploded while it was in there.
Martha, thank you. Do you know about these explosion risks?
No, I haven't heard about these explosion risks, but there are explosion risks from many things that we have in our lives. There's risks from having McDonald's coffee that's too hot. And the idea is that in public health, you cannot eliminate all risks. We're not going to have a perfectly safe, pure, clean world.
One of the benefits of Food and Drug Administration regulation, which we call for in our Times op-ed, is that we'll help to assure quality control and safety of these products.
How far would you go in allowing them to be smoked in public? One of my producers said she saw one in use at the New York Philharmonic a few weeks ago, not right in Avery Fisher Hall in the seats, but yes, in Avery Fisher Hall in sort of the lobby areas just outside the seats. And she was kind of shocked by that.
Well, I think you've hit on the key objection to them on the part of public health. It's the threat of renormalizing smoking that e-cigarettes pose. And, of course, the concern is that they're going to serve as a kind of gateway device, that you'll start with your e-cigarette and then you'll move on to cigarettes, and before you know it, you'll have a several pack a day habit. But, in fact, they might work the opposite way. They could serve as a gateway. The caller, Martha, mentioned the child in the car. They could serve as a gateway to smoking e-cigarettes in enclosed spaces, in cars, with children, in homes, and in apartments. And that's what makes these different from other products that we've seen before.
And that's why Big Tobacco likes it, right? And they've come out on the same side as you. Not usually, not every day is it that you see people from the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia on the same side of an issue relating to smoking as Big Tobacco. But they hope that this does normalize smoking and act as kind of a gateway device.
Well, I think that's questionable. I think from the point of view of any kind of industry, they're interested in making as most money as they possibly can. If they can make it with e-cigarettes as opposed to tobacco cigarettes, I think they'll do that. But it certainly does make us uncomfortable to be on the same side of any issue as an industry that's probably single-handedly been responsible for more preventable deaths than any other in the history of the world.
We had a flight attendant who called in, and unfortunately she couldn't wait to talk on the air. But she said that she's been having trouble on airplanes distinguishing between regular cigarettes, which, of course, are not allowed at all anymore on airplanes, and e-cigarettes, which are? You can smoke an e-cigarette on an airplane even?
That I don't know.
As far as I know.
I don't want anybody even wear a lot of perfume on an airplane with me, so I can imagine being supportive of some limits, but not based on health hazards, but based on other rationales.
Well, I guess the question is, are people starting to smoke tobacco cigarettes on airplanes again? And I've not heard of that.
No,
happening.
I haven't either.
Andrea in Ocean County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Listen, I guess ultimately the argument that I've heard so far from the people that are against these e-cigarettes is that they can't distinguish between an e-cigarette and a regular cigarette. Now, they may appear to look like a regular cigarette. I don't know. But the point is, what's the first thing that tells you that someone's smoking? What's the first thing that you know as a non-smoker when someone's smoking?
It's the smell.
The smell. There's no smell that comes from these e-cigarettes. My nephew was here over the Thanksgiving holiday, and he was, you know, quit smoking. He had been off of cigarettes for over 2 weeks. He was so proud of himself. And when he actually smoked this e-cigarette, if there was any smell that I could smell at all, it was maybe like a sweet smell. But it wasn't a tobacco smell, and it was definitely not a noxious cigarette smell. And so here's my last point that I wanted to make. If people are making a conscientious effort to get off of cigarettes, I know as an ex-smoker, it was one of the hardest addictions I ever beat. It was awful. And the patches didn't work. The gum didn't work. The irritability that came with the withdrawal from the nicotine by not having it was awful. And to think of having an e-cigarette then, you know, versus now when people can actually quit this awful addiction, you know, I just feel like I kind of feel bad for smokers. Like, they're here they are. They're trying to quit a really bad habit, and they're being further villainized by using it. Believe me, they do not smell. You can tell when someone's smoking a cigarette.
Andrea, thank you so much for your call. Mm-hmm. And so in our last half minute or so, you do propose that they be regulated in some way, though remain legal, right? So what kind of regulation are you proposing?
Well, the Food and Drug Administration has the capacity now, as part of its capacity to regulate tobacco products, to regulate them as modified risk tobacco products. Of course, the sticking point is that they're not quite nicotine replacement therapy. They're not quite cigarettes. So how do you fit them into the regulatory framework?
And there we leave it with Amy Fairchild and James Cogrove, professors of sociomedical sciences at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, as City Council deliberates whether to ban e-cigarettes in all the public places where regular tobacco cigarettes are banned. Thanks to you for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to you all for listening today. Talk to you tomorrow. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.